I'm like almost yelling out the window, y'all having a Corona orgy or something? I mean, you couldn't get closer if you tried.
This is Entrepreneurs Anonymous.
Yeah, I'm Brad Waldrop. I'm the general manager of Ward Plumbing and Heating. We're based in Silva, North Carolina. We service I call it a 4.5 county area over here in Western North Carolina, which is Jackson County. That's where Silva and Cullowhee and Cashers are, Macon County where Franklin and Highlands are, Swain County where Bryson City is, and Haywood County where Waynesville and Canton and Maggie Valley and Lake Junaluska are. And we also service Buncombe County from downtown Asheville and west. And we provide HVAC and plumbing services and installation in that area. And we have since 1977, actually. We have 24 employees prior to this situation. Probably 16 of them are currently on unemployment. And like everybody, we're doing what we can to protect our people and our community as we all figure out, you know, what we can do going forward that's safe for everybody while still trying to keep a business afloat somehow.
yeah, and keep yourself sane.
I love my wife. My wife's 8 months pregnant, so that's been a significant. I would have taken this seriously because that's how I'm made. I believe in science, and I understand it well enough to know that this is not something to be taken lightly.
Yeah.
But with an 8-month pregnant wife, I've been even more sensitive to it. You know, from a personal standpoint, we've kind of just toiled with what does that look like?
Oh, yeah.
If she or I or God, both of us are sick in the way that we know this virus is making people sick and the baby decides to show up.
Right.
Or we have to induce because we get sick. You know, how does that go?
Yeah.
Even just the idea of going to the hospital
has
been kind of daunting, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's scary.
That's not necessarily the business side, but all that's going, when you said, you know, trying to keep yourself sane, that popped into my head. Like,
yeah.
So, yeah, we've been pretty rigid on ours. We came up with a list of what we consider, you know, actual legitimate emergency, basically, services. So, you got a major water leak. You got a whole house clog. You know, we're actually not even going out if one of your toilets is stopped up. You know, if you've got another one, we're asking people to use to do that, and it's worked so far. Everybody's been very understanding, with a couple exceptions. Ironically, those couple exceptions were houses we're building for people from Florida. Both of them.
I'm shocked.
just didn't understand how we came to make this decision.
Yeah.
I'm like, man, we normally got, you know, 20 or so guys in the field on any given day. We got two right now.
Yeah.
Handling emergencies. And you want me to send them over to plumb this house that you waited 14 months to even start?
Yeah.
I just can't. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I can't justify that right now. Well, and that's, you know, tenants can be the same way. You know, their emergency might be a different definition than what I have, but, you know, we're just trying to play it by ear, and some people just want things done in a certain way, so they may even inflate the actual problem to try to get it to become an emergency because it's inconvenient.
Yeah. We don't share with them, and we haven't publicized the list of services that we're offering. We only share that in the event we get a little pushback.
Right.
So they don't know it beforehand, so they can't use it against us, basically.
That's what you got to do. That's what, well, and that's really the reason I wanted to talk to you is about all that same kind of stuff. I mean, you know, the problems, the typical problems that we know we all have in everyday entrepreneurship, but then these unique things that are kind of happening so quickly that we're all just having to kind of adapt to and figure out, well, you know, things, some things have to be done, but we've got to try to get people to understand what those are and not get them, you know, mad at us when this is over. We still need to be in business.
I'll tell you when it shifted for me a little bit was when I started talking to my guys, you know, and I mean, our guys are how you think they'd be. You know, these guys, they work for a living. You don't ask them to not work, you know. Or if you do, they'll go find somewhere else to do it.
Yeah.
But when I really took the time to talk to them, the answer was virtually the same across the board. If you want me to work, I'm willing to work. I'm definitely willing to take care of customers in emergency situations as long as we're going to take the time to confirm with them that they're not showing any symptoms or don't think they've been exposed to the virus and haven't traveled. But if you're asking me if I want to go full bore into multiple houses a day, you know, kind of carelessly, no.
Yeah.
That's pretty much what they told me. In a way, I was proud of them. You know, you want to think that the guys that work with you have got a good head on their shoulders, and this is them expressing those concerns to me is a sign that they do. You know, I got to be a little worried if they weren't concerned.
Yeah, if they were just going ahead like normal, like nothing was going on.
And we did. The first thing we did was stocking everybody up with hand washing supplies on every truck, emphasizing the importance of that and distancing even before many people were. But then after I gave it some more consideration and really thought about what we're being asked to do, basically where I landed in my head was, you know, the probability that we, meaning our business, is linked to the spread of the virus is obviously pretty low considering we don't have that many cases around here in general. But what could I stand on if it did happen?
Right.
And that really came down to emergency type stuff for me. You know, we don't want to spread the virus or get it from a customer and wind up with it in our families and our homes under any circumstances.
Yeah,
but if we did that in the case of a true emergency, I'd feel much more justified than somebody that just likes air conditioning.
And that's a similar thing that the guy that usually is co-hosting this podcast with me, he's more, his primary day-to-day is restaurants. And he was really one of the first ones to shut his stuff down in Tennessee because they're lagging a little behind anyway. The governor's not really taking things very seriously over there. But he felt the same as we're talking about. You know, I'm going to feel – and he told me a very specific story that he kind of shared on this podcast, too, about working at one of the restaurants, filling in some time that he needed at his newest one where he was still staffing up, and just hearing conversations from the general public that were coming into the restaurant and how they just weren't taking this seriously. And, you know, just hearing those conversations, he said it just kind of scared him to death. Like, you know, nobody – was paying any attention to any of it.
Yeah. I mean, I will tell you here in Silva, you know, I'm still going out a couple times a week. And I'm not worried about being out driving around. You know, that's not really a risky scenario, but the traffic is way lower than it was 2 weeks ago. So,
yeah,
you know, it's sticking with some people. Not all, of course. I was telling two of the guys that I work with, we're actually just over here mowing our grass. Well, one of them does that on the side. And I was telling them I pulled up behind a road construction crew yesterday out in Old Settlement, Ash Settlement. You know where that is, Old Settlement.
Yeah, yeah.
They were repaving through there. And I shit you not, and right in front of my truck, they had me stopped, you know, with a flagger. And I was behind one of the construction trucks, and they all gathered behind that truck. I counted seven of them damn near within the width of the tailgate.
Yeah. In a wad.
Seven of them. I'm like, almost yelled out the window, y'all having a Corona orgy or something? I mean, you couldn't get closer if you tried.
Well, and that's the stuff that I think was scaring me and Jamie, the co-host of this podcast. It just, there is a certain segment that, you know, and I think you're right too, that it maybe is resonating more and more as time progresses with people, but early on, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks ago, this was just really not what was on anybody's mind. There was a certain segment that was just kind of business as usual.
Oh yeah, well, my bandmate, he's kind of like he loves science, and he's I wouldn't call him apocalyptic, but he's interested in things like that. Well, he knew about this virus a couple months ago, and he and his family had tickets to go to Disney in February. Well, I mean, they put bathroom facilities in their van. When they were at Disney, they were social distancing, and he said they were getting all kinds of crappy looks from people because they'd step back, and people were like, what's wrong with you? And he's like, oh, I think you haven't heard of COVID-19. And nobody had.
Right.
And Disney, wasn't refunding their money, so they were stuck with the choice of taking a, you know, COVID-19 Disney trip or losing several thousand dollars.
Mm.
So they went, but did that. And he actually told us about this virus at a band practice, I'm going to say back in maybe January or February. And we're all not necessarily the demographic that you're referring to, but we still were, you know, virtually unaffected by the information he was sharing with us, because it was like, you know, well, you hear about this stuff every now and then, it probably won't be a big deal. And here we are.
Yeah.
We're playing that a pristine record on it, but personally and as a business, I'm pretty proud of the fact that we were more responsive than most.
Yeah. Oh, no, I think so. And I think that's going to be something that people will, you know, hopefully weigh out as they're looking for businesses to do business with in the coming months, that, you know, there are some that have reacted well and maybe some that have reacted in a not so good kind of way. So.
Yeah, I've been kind of phrasing it to our guys as I've been comparing it to building code, because that's something they're familiar with. So we always kind of joke, and I stole this from a guy that trained me at one time, that building code is the shittiest house you can build in the state of North Carolina.
Yeah.
that's what building code is. So if you want to build the shittiest house, then all you have to do is what it says in the code book. Well, I've compared that to our reaction to this by saying, you know, we are an essential business. We actually have a certificate from the state of North Carolina, because you're able to apply for one, and they will deem you a state essential business, which means that we are able to do anything we do.
Right.
But that would be less than what we can do.
Right.
And that's been our perspective on it, is we're being asked to stay at home and have as little contact with the public as we can by standing on that essential business declaration and doing everything we normally do. We're not doing that.
Well, and I think that's an important point, that I think maybe there is some confusion even among other business owners about essential businesses, that if you are an essential business, that somehow that means that you have to stay open and that you have to keep doing things like normal. And I don't know if that's necessarily the way that they think about it, but it seems like that is the way that some people at least end up reacting to it, which, you know, I think is odd, because it's like you said, that's kind of the bare minimum.
I agree. I'm on an HVAC owners, managers and owners forum on Facebook, and there's several thousand members on there. And I have seen, and of course in the last couple of weeks, virtually everything on there has been related to COVID-19. I've seen a pretty significant shift in the tone from, I'll say, 2 weeks ago. This is my estimation. I don't have any data to support this, but it seemed like 75% or more of contractors on there were virtually business as usual.
Yeah.
And I've seen that shift to kind of seems to be the overwhelming or the majority tone is what you and I are saying right now, which essential business, you have an essential business and you have essential services that business provides. It seems like more people have shifted to, we're only going to do the essential services, not call ourselves an essential business and have a heyday.
Yeah.
Not that anybody's having a heyday, but you get what I mean.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think that's what I've seen, even with some similar types of groups that are real estate related or realtor related, is that over the last couple of weeks, things have changed as maybe they were deeming themselves an essential business and still trying to shut home or have closings or whatever they were trying to do. And at some point, you know, I think it can be pointed out, and some people just haven't thought about it until it's pointed out. Yeah, technically you're an essential business, but are those things you're doing essential right now?
Right.
Is that something we need to be doing?
Yeah, and that is the there's also like very interesting legal twist to this whole thing. You know what? If you could list the list of downfalls of living in a free society, you're pretty sure, or not downfalls, but disadvantages. This is arguably one.
Yes.
Because we can't tell people that they have to stay at home. Yeah, and that's been an interesting thing to observe. How many times have you seen doctors tell you, if you're feeling ill, stay at home?
Yeah.
I mean, that's general guidance to not spread something, but usually they tell you, you know, if you're feeling ill, come see us.
Yeah, come in.
And they're literally saying, unless you feel very, or you know, relatively certain that you actually have COVID-19,
right,
don't go to the doctor.
Stay at home, quarantine yourself.
And I think that's more a reaction. I've read that, which is frightening and a little disheartening. I've read that as a resource reaction more than a medical reaction.
Yeah.
What they're actually saying is not our medical advice to you is to not go to the doctor. What they're saying is our resource advice to you is don't come to the doctor because we can't handle it.
Yeah, we don't have enough staff, beds, whatever it is. Yeah.
Exactly. And even in cases where in areas where that hasn't happened yet, like here, see, they've had, I don't know if you know where my wife and I live, but we live over off Allen Henson Circle. You know where that is?
Yes.
Well, our front yard, we're kind of up on a hill here. We can see that new doctor's office they put in up on the hill across from the hospital. If you come down by C.J. Harris, like you're going to come down to Scott's Creek.
Yeah.
There's a newer building over to the left, real nice medical building up there on the left. Well, they've had triage tents in that parking lot for 2 weeks now.
Yeah.
Or some sort of tents. I haven't gone over there to ask them what they are, but they're big white tents.
Right.
I assume that to either check people out before they come in the building or take care of them if they are COVID positive, which we've had virtually no confirmed. Well, I think we've had two confirmed cases so far in Jackson County, and neither of them were permanent residents.
Yeah.
You probably already know that. But
yeah, they were probably some of your plumbing clients.
Yes, probably so. I mean, we've had odd requests and kind of odd conversations where it's been indicated to us that there were people coming here to escape wherever home is. Yeah, they've tried to couch it in, well, this is the time of year we normally come anyway, and that may or may not be true, but still not the right thing to do.
Yeah, and there was an article in the New York Times this morning talking about that. I didn't get to read it all. I got interrupted with something else, but it started out talking about it, I think it posed the question, was the title of the article, about have New Yorkers infected other people by going to their second or vacation home in other parts of the country? And, you know, the basically the first line is yes.
Yes. I mean, I was about to say I could write that article.
Yeah.
Yes, Brad Waldrop, April 9th, 2020.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's odd. But, I mean, I get it. You know, I'm sure that they're scared that the city's getting locked down 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
You know, I get it, but it's still not the right thing to do.
Preservation of you and yours is an extremely difficult instinct to counteract.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm sure that what most of those people are feeling is, whether they could summarize it this way or even emotionally or psychologically in touch with it, what they're feeling is, if I can keep my family safe, I'm going to do whatever it takes.
Yeah.
And that's a common sentiment and usually an applaudable sentiment, right?
Right. Yeah.
But in this case, if that means leaving a highly infected area to go somewhere that hasn't had the problem yet, no.
Yeah. Really bad idea.
That's interesting. I might try to find that article because I hadn't heard it from you know, I've heard a lot of it from our perspective, of the don't come here perspective, but hearing it from the don't go there perspective might be interesting, an interesting read.
Yeah, I want to finish it when I can circle back to it. But, and I think that's the other part of this that some of the listeners on the podcast might not understand about some of these parts of North Carolina and other areas, but in our area that we're familiar with some of these places that are able to shut down, like the Cherokee Indian Reservation at the Quail boundary, or Graham County being so remote, basically saying there's a couple of roads in here and we're going to post people at it and you're not coming in otherwise.
Yeah. Y'all ain't ever got us a Walmart. We're closing the roads now. The one time y'all want to come here.
Yeah.
See how this works. Normally we got to come your way.
it's all very strange.
I mean, that's kind of what I was referring to earlier with the legality part of the whole thing.
Yeah.
I've had two kind of just legal quandaries in my head throughout this whole thing. Not for me or my business, but just that I'm wondering about societally, which is that, you know, how do you tell people to stay home? And I've talked to a couple attorneys that have told me you don't, not legally. You want to try to encourage them to do it voluntarily, but virtually anything you do that dictates it by law is pretty much by definition unconstitutional. That was one of the ones when I saw Graham County had done that I was like, man, I'm not saying that's the most progressive court system in the world down there, but how are they going to justify, enforcing that in the event that anybody has one of the many reasons why they would protest it?
And
under arrest for?
Right.
Robbinsville?
Yeah, we were joking about that the other day. If our folks that screen tenants are screening tenants a few years from now and they start seeing this type of crime on somebody's background check. You were driving into a county that you weren't allowed in.
The other legal quandary I've wondered about is the medical side of things, and that's the wrongful death suits. So when I first started thinking about us working, I don't consider myself a legal expert, but that was one of the things that popped into my mind. I tell a guy he's got to go work. He gets exposed to the virus and, however that goes, gets somebody in his family sick. And, in some cases, we're actually able to trace the spread of the virus very specifically, right?
Right.
So all of a sudden, I sent him out to do something and infected his family or whoever else, however long that list goes. Who's responsible for that decision?
Right. Well, and I think that's exactly the kind of thing that I've been curious about from – my standpoint and for other business owners is the liability of all this stuff. Because I mean, as much as we care about our employees, it is also a little bit of self-preservation to think about these things, to say, well, look, yeah, I don't want you to be infected because it's you and we have a personal relationship and you work with me and all those things. But also, I don't really know how this is going to play out if I sent you to do something and then you wound up sick. I don't know what, I mean, that's a strange situation. I don't know how that, I have no idea how that works. And we have somebody that we've been talking to, about legal aspects of all this for businesses. So, I mean, maybe that's something I can ask on the next time we talk to him, because I'm curious how that goes. I mean,
you get what I'm asking, right? I mean, who's to say, well, you got an employee that does what I just said, and then when asked how it happened, we all know, it's right there in front of us, and the employee says, well, shoot, I didn't even really want to work, but Brad told me I had to.
Right. It was an emergency. He made me go do it. I did.
Yeah. I mean, in the emergencies, we're doing them and taking that risk, but I couldn't justify, just throwing a blanket over the whole thing and saying we're going to do whatever we normally do and put that risk across instead of, a handful of jobs a day at the most. Across, dozens of them like we normally do, it didn't make sense to me. Just
even if I were to say the health concern aside, which of course I wouldn't, but even if I did, just the liability side of it, not knowing how that would be viewed, you know, or interpreted.
How it would play out later, yeah.
We don't have any guidance for that, right? I mean, the government or medical, if you follow the medical advice, it's currently in most places, it's pretty straightforward. Stay home. I couldn't say I was following that, right? And if you're looking for additional guidance, you've got this vague essential services approach, which is, as I just said, obviously vague. In fact, if you read North Carolina's,
yeah, it, pretty much anything technically could be considered a.
Well, the very first exclusion is businesses that practice social distancing.
Yeah.
So there you go. If you want to be essential, all you got to do is say that you practice social distancing, which, by the way, is a term no one had ever considered 2 weeks ago. But all of a sudden, you're an expert at it.
Yeah.
You draw yourself up a social distancing certificate and say, you know.
Our staff's been certified.
Yeah, here we go.
Well, and I think that's another interesting point that we've talked about some on this podcast before is this idea. And I mean, I think it goes to being an entrepreneur or a small business owner in general, is that you kind of got to figure all this stuff out as you go. And you can take guidance from things like the CDC or whatever, but if their stuff is also changing every day, and you know, as a small business owner, we're wearing so many hats, you know, so we're going to put on the legal hat, and then we got to put on the training hat, and then we train what that we think we're supposed to have people know, and then that changes from the CDC because now they've learned something new, and I mean, it just becomes overwhelming to try to keep up with it all and to try to keep your people safe and to do what you think you should be doing. And then the whole time if you're doing that, you might be having to put your financial hat on to figure out, well, how am I going to pay these bills if we're not doing these dozens of jobs and we're down to these, you know, a few jobs a day? You know, what? How does the SBA stuff work? I mean, there's so many hats that these small business folks have to wear that I get why people are so frustrated.
Oh, no doubt, because, I consider myself, you know, probably above average at interpreting things like, you know, like the Federal Act. I've read it, and I think I get the general gist, not only of how it works, but what they're trying to accomplish. And I think there's some pretty plausible angles in it, by the way. But I know from dealing with lots of other business owners that they're not good at interpreting things like that.
Right.
So that alone took me, myself, with a very good CPA helping me and very good resources, I would say, compared to most, it still took me a week and a half solid of most of my day, by the way, wading through that and figuring out what it meant, how we would use it, how it's supposed to be used, how it's not supposed to be used, what it's really trying to accomplish. I mean, it wasn't just reading it. I'll put it that way.
Right.
And,
well, and I think that takes into, you know, that's the assumption, too, that you weren't so intimidated by it that you just didn't do it. Because I think that's a lot of people that are in small business. That's part of the fear is, I don't know anything about any of that. I wouldn't even know where to start. So they don't.
No, my wife, you know, her business is her.
Right.
She gave me a very good picture yesterday of what you just said. After dealing with this PPP thing for, she might have had 2 hours in it. Like I just told you, I had a solid week and a half. She goes, can somebody just fucking tell me what to do?
Yeah.
She didn't want to deal, you know, she didn't want to do what I had done. And I think that's really common. You know, she's a interior designer. She's a one-person business. So she doesn't want to get into all of that. I mean, you know, just what am I supposed to do here?
Yeah, well, and I think especially in that type of creative world, you know, it doesn't necessarily lend itself to somebody who also tends to enjoy sitting down and reading loans and, you know, those types of documents.
For sure. I mean, the list of people who actually enjoy it is probably incredibly short. I just happen to be, you know, somewhat able and willing to do it.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I think that's that's all the stuff that I'm curious about, and I'm sure that some of these listeners are. Is just this idea of what types of things that you have tried to do, not just from a safety standpoint for your folks, but also from a business standpoint to keep things afloat. What have been some of your approaches to this, or have you been able to take advantage yet of any of these programs that are out there? Which ones do you think might help you?
We have, by the way, are we recording stuff for the podcast now?
Yeah, I'm recording the whole thing, and then I can just kind of edit out whatever. So
I'll stop dropping F-bombs.
Oh, it's all good, man. I do it all the time.
So we have applied for the PPP. When I mentioned earlier that I feel like there has been some applaudable things done for, commendable things done for, to help businesses. The PPP, I'm not saying that it's a cure-all for any business or that it's a great application for all businesses. But we've applied for it, and it will – if it works the way I understand it to work, it'll be incredibly helpful for us because, right now we got, as I mentioned earlier, we normally have 24 employees, and we typically have 19 or 20 or so in the field every day and 4 or so supporting them, right? Right now we have 2 in the field and 2 supporting them, one of which is me, and I'm basically not supporting them as much as I'm just doing the business. You know, stuff I normally have help with, I'm kind of taking a lot of that on. So that means we've got the rest of those people on unemployment. And the catch with that, particularly in this situation, seems to me to be, or the biggest one seems to be, you know, normally if somebody was separated from the business for most reasons, almost any of them, the very first thing would happen is they'd go off benefits. We offer medical benefits.
Right.
But how in the world do you do that right now? So the PPP, my understanding of it is that it's basically designed to get people back on payroll. I'm looking at that as kind of a threefold benefit. That first one is arguably paramount, which is people on payroll are presumably still on the company medical plan. And of all the times to have people without access to healthcare, which really means access to insurance, this is not the time for that, right?
Yeah.
So we get people back on the medical insurance. What I know, and you probably know this too, Corey, is, you know, the type of guys that we work with, they're only going to not work so long, even with unemployment benefits, before they start finding something to do. Well, one of the questions that popped into my head is, what is that something? Well, more than likely that something is something that means getting out of their house and coming into contact with the public, right?
Yeah.
Which we're being asked not to do. So by the PPP will hopefully allow us to put people back on payroll and basically at least drastically reduce that temptation.
Yeah.
You know, it won't be a quarantine, but they'll have an income that allows them to stay home if they choose to cooperate with the stay at home orders.
Right. I think it's a pride thing too. I mean, it is with my guys. I'm sure some of these are coming out of the same way. It's like, well, I mean, I don't know about all this. You know, I don't know about all this old unemployment.
Exactly. And I picked up on a little bit of that sentiment, but. Yeah. Like I said earlier, I've not heard much of it. Mostly my guys have been, you know, of the mind that they want to stay, not necessarily home, but to reduce their chances of coming in contact with the virus. So this gives us the PPP, which we've only applied for. We've not received the funds yet. I don't think many people have, but gives us an opportunity to mitigate that effect of, you know, well, I got to go find something else to do.
Yeah.
No, you don't, because we're going to pay you to do something, but it's not going to be what we've been asked not to do.
Yeah.
In our case, we're actually planning on doing a whole – I've already got lots of training resources lined up. Because normally it's an interesting scenario because, you know, all of the training, virtually all the training that we offer, we actually have a very comprehensive online training program that we purchased from another business.
Yeah.
But it's fully voluntary, right? So like any other training, when it's fully voluntary, you know, your participation levels are affected by people's willingness to do it.
Right.
But in this case, I'm trying to pull, you know, flowers out of poop here, but in this case, I'll literally be trying to find ways to get to justify payroll.
Right. Yeah. Right. So, yeah, some training would be so, ideal.
Top of the list. Normally, yeah. We don't require you to train. This week, I need you to train 30 hours, however that takes out. So, but getting back to kind of the threefold, I look at it as it gives us the ability to keep people on medical insurance. It gives us the ability to mitigate that temptation to go out into the world because you now don't have to. You know, people can a lot of people, they got to work. In this case, we'll be able to give them an alternative to that. And then three, I think, you know, I know this, and probably you do in your business. You put guys on unemployment long enough, and they go find something else.
Right.
So when we do get a green light or a yellow light or however that looks, by using the PPP, hopefully all or at least vast majority of our staff is still in place, whereas the alternative would be, you know, for example, we have four HVAC install crews. Those are kind of the bread and butter of an HVAC business.
Right.
Well, if one of them goes and finds another job, look at what that does to us. One.
Right.
That's just one. I mean, I spend an unbelievable amount of time, as anybody who does, who manages a business like this, finding that one.
Right. Yes.
I mean, seriously.
No, I get it. And I think that's
recruiting, training,
yeah.
Everything else. One is a big freaking deal.
And I think that's going to be the part of this that maybe other people besides the small business owners that are thinking about this maybe have even considered at this point is even when there is this green light or yellow light that we're talking about, that doesn't necessarily mean that all these businesses are just back in action on day one because who knows where that's going to leave us. I mean, we hope these things like the PPP are going to work, but, you know, if you do lose that one, then you're not back in action at 100% for possibly another 12 months, 16 months. I mean, I don't know. I think it's going to vary by business.
So oh, yeah.
That's a scary thing.
I can tell you I wouldn't find a guy, you know, more than likely to replace that one. Again, we're talking about one for the whole summer, which is our busy season when we need him the most. It'd be very difficult to pick somebody up. I've tried before. I've had little success, but it ain't a turkey shoot.
Right.
I'll tell you that. It's not easy. So I think that's hopefully winds up being a very beneficial byproduct of the PPP that I really haven't heard mentioned much. I mean, you know, of course it's to cover payroll costs, and that's a pretty obvious, straightforward benefit. But keeping your staff intact is, you know, you're talking about a massive potential benefit when you consider that this is affecting, you know, I don't know, at least half the businesses in the country.
Yeah. Well, and you could get that's kind of the way we've looked at it is we could try to get things back to where they were pre-COVID-19 faster if we can just retain these same people or else it's like, all right, well, we're starting all over again when this is over with new people and new training and new problems and.
Yeah, I mean, I've been managing the business since late 2014, and there's no question that we have the best overall staff that we've had in that whole period right now, or we did 3 weeks ago.
Right.
So to me, it's, you know, it's not a rosy prospect to be having to rebuild any significant portion of that due to this situation. So, I'm thankful for the PPP, as I mentioned earlier, that's obviously not perfect. Imagine trying to throw a solution at that many businesses that would be anywhere near perfect, and it's not possible. There's already been frustrations over the timing of it. Well, now turn that into, you know, 50 different solutions or 50,000 different tailored solutions. I don't know how you can go about that.
No, I don't either.
Yeah, I mean, I'm able to read between the lines financially on the way the program is laid out and see what I believe to be the intent. And I honestly, I think it's fairly early. I think, you know, if they're going for those kind of 3 points that I pointed out that'll help our business, I think that's three good ones. Keep people on health care. Give people an alternative to desperation that would cause them to go out. I mean, let alone their own personal circumstances. If they're having to go out and work, they're kind of screwing us all over, right?
Yeah.
So that and keeping the businesses intact, to me, that's three. You know, no one knows the timeline on this thing, so no one knows how effective that will be, you know, in its entirety. But if that's three of the major premises of the program, which I believe it, you know, almost has to be, then I'd say those are smart ones overall.
Yeah.
I'm sure it was whoever came up with this stuff, it was very much one of those meetings that I'm sure you've had where you're looking at the best of 18 crappy options.
Yeah. Yes.
I think that they did pretty well in designing the PPP specifically by saying, you know, if we don't do something like this, then the alternative that we get is going to be worse. That's
yeah.
what I believe had to be the mentality.
Right.
Half the businesses in America and, you know, drastically affect them financially, including all their employees, some of whom are going to go away. Where does that lead you?
Well, and with this PPP that you chose to apply for, did you consider the other program that the SBA is offering, the emergency, the EIDL type loan? Did you consider that and weigh both your options, or how did you go into that process?
I did, because I knew about the EIDL before the PPP. I think most people did. So basically, mine and my partner's mentality 3 weeks ago was, okay, where do we go come up with roughly $250,000 to do what the PPP is now going to allow us to do? So we were trying to figure out a way to cover payroll, cover rent and utilities, you know, the essential expenses. Unemployment was always there, but we were already thinking of ways we could try to keep some people at least on payroll, you know,
right?
Because we knew about the medical insurance side of things. That was the main impetus for that way of thinking, was how can we keep these people with medical insurance? Because at some point we run out of money to pay for medical insurance, right? I mean, that's
right.
The business.
Well, and I think the other side of that is you may have this too, but you might have people that it's not just the COVID-19 fears that people have for medical insurance. They may have just conditions that really require them to have medical insurance.
Oh, of course. No, yeah, that's an ever-present concern. I mean, that's
yeah.
always there, you know. So, yes, we knew about the EIDL first and considered it. And honestly, even when I first just saw the interest rate on it, I felt a sense of relief, because any other option we would look at as far as private funding went would not have that attractive of an interest option. So that's
right.
kind of what our head was 3 weeks ago, was where do we go find, you know, that type of money to keep the business afloat? And we knew it would be a loan. And nobody
right.
was going to give it to us, obviously.
Yeah.
That's not how it works. So when I first read about the PPP, it was an interesting gestation period. I had to talk to several people over the course of 3 or 4 days to accept it, to actually accept that what was being offered is what it is.
Right.
I kept asking our CPA, I'm like, so am I getting this, that we're being asked to put people back on payroll whether or not we have work for them, and that is the debt that will be forgiven? Because, you know, it just kind of goes against everything that we normally do. Right. Normally, you know, if you don't have the work, you don't pay the guys, you know.
And if you're going into debt, somebody expects that debt to be paid at some point.
I felt sorry for our CPA because I think she had to tell me 3 or 4 times, yes, Brad, I believe that that is what you're being asked to do. I'm like, but are you sure?
Let's have another call because I've got more questions about if this is accurate or not.
Well, and that was an interesting thing in the beginning of my learning about the PPP was, you know, my CPA had read the act and had we had similar questions. You know, the same ones a lot of people had, I'm sure. You know, well, what if I don't have work for the guys? Am I still supposed to pay them? Does this affect our, you know, the safety measures that we've put in place, which in our case has been, you know, really abstaining from a lot of work? How does this affect that? Am I supposed to now ask the guys to do work that I wasn't asking them to do before?
Right.
I mean, this hasn't changed anything from a safety standpoint. And she was, you know, at first my CPA wasn't able to answer a lot of that. And we both got a better understanding of what we believe to be the intention of the PPP. We kind of came to the conclusion that that's not really, it's not spelled out. But the fact that it's not spelled out kind of tells you by default that there's not really a work expectation. I'm not saying that we're trying to take advantage of it, of course, but it doesn't seem to be the intent that we're going to give you this money, now get back to work.
Right. Right, yeah, violate all these orders and just go back to work.
Is that how you're reading it, by the way?
Yeah, that I agree with what you're saying. That's what I think, too. And I think and I've done it. We've done that for the convenience store side of things because we've tried to cut hours at these stores and cut staff because there's not as many people, of course, out shopping at these places, which thank God they've slowed down. So we've done the same thing to try to just work out a system so that, you know, look, just be at home. We'll figure this out later.
Yeah, I think that's where everybody should be. Or not everybody. I've tried to be, you know, non-judgmental or I don't pretend to understand everybody's situation, obviously. But I feel like anybody who's able should be trying to follow the stay-at-home orders to the extent they can. I'll just put it that way.
Yeah, and I think that's the same problem that we all have. I have had that issue. I know Jamie, the co-host of this podcast, has had that issue of just trying to reserve some judgment because we see other business owners making decisions where the general public might not really look at or even notice. But then, you know, if you're in business, it seems like you tend to look at other people's businesses and make some assumptions or make some things maybe that you think about that other people don't. And we've talked about how we tried to reserve some judgment for some of these other businesses that we see where we're thinking, what the hell is this guy doing?
Well, I had one of those Floridians that we're building a house for sent me an email saying, you know, basically he didn't understand why we weren't coming out because all the other trades were there today. So my first thought was like, well, thanks for helping out, guys.
Yeah. For these other trades, just put them on the job.
Not on the job, but thanks for helping out society.
Yeah.
And then it was interesting because in the next email, I explained to him where we were and what our policy was right now. And in his next email, he says, well, I don't understand why there's a safety concern. No one else will be in the house. And I'm like, dude, your last email, you just told me every trade was there yesterday.
Everybody was just there touching everything.
Which one is it? Yeah. Is it everybody's there or nobody's there?
Yeah.
In addition to the fact that I had already told him at this point that we've got two guys running emergency calls only. I mean, are you proposing that I send those two guys to build your retirement home?
Yeah. Yeah.
At this point in time, is that what you're proposing?
Your home number 3 that you're going to be at for the holidays?
Yeah, I'm sorry, that's not falling into our emergency column right now.
Yeah.
Not that I'm not sensitive to the guy's situation as a customer. I mean, that's what we're there to do is help him build the house, but certainly doesn't qualify as an emergency.
Well, and I think that takes that leads me down this path to ask you something else similar that we've seen is at these gas stations. It reminds me of this. Do you feel like that the home state or the home address of some of these people and the reaction maybe in their own bubble or from their own leadership has impacted how they're talking to you about how you should be reacting to this stuff?
Well, I mean, I don't know how much you've weighed into politics in this podcast, but I don't think there's any question that the varied message from leadership has an effect on how the public handles the situation. I mean, we've literally seen that play out in different states. I mean, you can kind of almost trace in some cases, not so much, I don't have the numbers to support that you can trace the spread of the virus to the leadership response, but you can definitely trace the overall reaction to it. I mean, we saw it federally.
Right. Yeah.
When the President of the United States said that this was a hoax,
yes,
there was a significant portion of the population that, for whatever reason, because that's what they wanted to hear or that's what he said, however
right.
you want to look at it, that was the overall reaction. It took him changing his message to get a better medical and scientific, if you will, reaction.
Yeah.
And I've watched that, and I imagine you have too, play out at the state level as well.
Yeah.
And locally.
And I guess I'm curious because I know in Western North Carolina, for anybody listening that doesn't really know, we kind of tend to joke about our Florida comrades that are in the area who are snowbirds or who are halfback folks, which means, you know, they've come from up north to Florida and moved halfway back to where they came from and landed in Western North Carolina. And so I'm curious when we're talking about these Floridians that are wanting a retirement home and that you've been working on, you know, do you feel like directly that some of the things that they're telling you are things that they have opinions on because of where they're currently living?
I don't know that I could tie it to geography. I've wondered about it. I mean, as it happens, both of them are, you know, older folks. I've seen a little bit of a generational phenomenon at play here with this virus. It's been interesting to watch because, at least in my world, you know, we know that generally speaking, elderly are more susceptible to this virus and a lot of others for that matter.
Yeah.
But there has been some reluctance, it seems to me, amongst some of the older population to kind of accept what's going on.
Right.
And I've wondered if that's been a little bit of the I've seen worse, mentality that you sometimes hear out of older folks. Well, I've been through this virus, that virus. I've wondered if it's that. But, it would seem more than coincidental that we've literally had two customers that I know of that have not supported our decision to discontinue a lot of our work temporarily, and they both came from Florida.
Yeah. Well, and the reason I'm asking is because we've talked about this before on a podcast episode, different one, but that's what we were seeing at gas stations is especially over on that 441 corridor that you're familiar with in the Jackson County area, is especially early on in this, North Carolina's governor took some fairly swift action. And Georgia's governor at least started out taking some swift action with dismissing some schools and then kind of backed off with some of those actions. But what we saw were a bunch of folks coming from the Florida and Georgia area who had looked up and kind of figured out that nothing much had changed in Tennessee and were hitting 441 north and headed up there and decided they were going to drive across the mountain and go hang out in Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge for the weekend. So, you know, we were looking at it as, well, it's because Tennessee didn't really take any swift action. So even when other people had kids out of school and nothing else to do and they were off work, they were like, well, let's make a week out of going to Gatlinburg.
Oh, yeah.
And
well,
then, you know, then they're all driving right up through our area. And you know, I mean, hopefully not spreading germs, but, I mean, I don't know how you don't.
No, I'd be surprised if the guidance they received at home didn't play into that significantly. I mean, let's face it, that's what leadership is about. You know, if you have the opportunity to give people good guidance, that's kind of what you're there for.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Among other things, but that's a big part of it. And so when you tell the residents of your state, wherever that is, anything short of what we're facing, or downplay it, provide misinformation, which has happened, then those are the known results of those actions, you know, and in this case, we're just seeing more of
displacement of those consequences than usual, right? So you're getting to feel the pain of bad guidance and from other areas wherever you are. I know here in Silva, I mean, of course people's attention was heightened to it, but especially around 2 weeks ago when we all started kind of coming to grips with this and the stay-at-home orders started, or stay-at-home requests, I call them, started falling into place, there was lots of people around here noticing way more out-of-state tags.
Yeah, yeah.
That's common for this time of year, but, I mean, these are people I know well that don't really lose their cool. And I saw it myself. I mean, I was driving down Main Street, Silva, and I was paying attention more than usual because of this phenomenon you and I are talking about right now.
Yeah.
But I saw a lot, I mean, a high percentage of the tags going down Main Street, Silva, were out-of-state tags. But yeah. All the businesses closed, basically. This is after that point. I'm still seeing these tags, and I couldn't help but wonder, you know, well, I didn't have to wonder where they came from because they got a tag on their car, but I couldn't help but wonder.
Yeah, the why.
The why.
Yeah, that's I don't know. And I'm with you. I don't have any of these answers. I just think it's interesting, and I think it also ties into what we've been talking about as far as, you know, liability goes and things. I mean, just you know, and what you mentioned about this, you know, this free society and democracy, like it's great, but it has drawbacks that you can't just lock these things down.
I have a good buddy that I used to work with in Atlanta for years. He's Colombian. And he posted on Facebook a couple days ago, when is the damn governor of Georgia going to tell everybody they have to stay home? Why are we still messing around with this? And I didn't comment on his post, but I couldn't help but think, you know, he comes from a culture where that would be done with little problem.
Yeah, instantly.
You know? Yeah. And you would literally have law enforcement out in the streets, more than likely, unfortunately, physically making people go home.
Right.
That's not America, right? That's not how we do things. But from a medical standpoint, I got what he was saying. I'll just put it
yeah.
that way.
Yeah.
I don't want to live in a country that's any less free as a general statement, but I got what he was saying. You know, how are we going to get people to cooperate here without making them?
Right. Yeah, I think all of this stuff is maybe going to play out over time, and maybe we'll see some answers to this as things keep moving forward like they're going to. But it's just interesting to me how this has played out, and it's played out state by state, sometimes county by county, and it's odd.
And I've been proud of us here locally. I mean, you know, Silva, I know that. So when you come down, I don't know if you've been over here in the last couple of weeks, have you?
No, I haven't.
When you come down into Silva and you turn toward Back Street, Mill Street, but everybody calls it the Back Street, where our shop is.
Yeah.
There is and has been for at least a couple months now one of those electronic speed limit boards there. They're trying to slow down the traffic there on Back Street.
Right.
You know how they changed the parking up there, and it's a little bit dicier to get through there. And you just have more people milling around back there than it used to. But instead of having the slow down sign on there for the last at least week and a half, maybe 2 weeks, it says stay at home, wash your hands. Stay at home.
Yeah, that's good.
It's actually pretty indicative of what the reaction's been here locally. Our businesses took the stay at home order seriously. Yes, all the retail businesses. I've not seen any retail businesses in the last week and a half. Besides Lowe's and Ingles, most of the smaller local businesses around here aren't even letting people inside. White Moon, little cafe right across from our shop. I get my coffee there most mornings, and I know the owners well, and they're good people, and they just have a table right at their front door. They're still serving sandwiches, but you can't go inside.
Yeah.
That's been common widespread reaction around here. People just are doing pretty well with it.
Well, that's good. That's good to know, because I mean, it seems like we either, you know, we tend to hear the other side of that about all of us in the Appalachians that we're too slow on the uptake on these things, but not all of us.
Not all of us, and this is you know this, Corey. This is largely a university town. I mean, you know, a lot of what we do. So there's an influence there. I see it in different parts of our culture. Not to get off track, but
I think that's part of what's at play. You know, Silva's a fairly progressive town for Western North Carolina, right?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
And so I think you've got people that would take something like this a little bit more to heart than they would in say, neighboring communities.
Yeah.
And I've seen that, by the way. That's actually played out here in some ways. My dad uses the word, you might have heard, Peshaw and something. That's when you kind of take something lightly. You know,
yes.
You just say, and I've seen more Peshawing of this situation in neighboring towns and more of taking it seriously here in Silva.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's good. Well, when you're looking at the stuff from your business standpoint and the PPP, and I know nobody has any timelines. I don't know of anybody that's received anything yet. Hopefully that stuff's on its way. But how do you feel like you're going to try to get things back going? Have you thought about a plan as far as, you know, like you mentioned earlier, about whether it's kind of starting with a yellow light or a green light? How do you feel like you're going to start going the other way as some of these orders maybe or suggestions get lifted?
I anticipate a yellow light.
Yeah.
I mean, based on my understanding of how viruses and things like this work, I anticipate not a green light, but a yellow light that says, okay, it's relatively safe to get back out and do certain things, but we're going to need to continue social distancing. We're going to need to continue, you know, the whole mask thing has been back and forth. But I think that we're still going to have to take precautions. So much of what we do is demand based, you know, it's real time. So I think we're going to be fortunate in a pretty seasonal business that, you know, if we get the yellow light / green light type situation anytime in the next couple months, few months actually, we'll have the demand more than likely to get back to work pretty well.
Yeah.
That's what I anticipate. But I also anticipate, you know, a change in our routines as far as the precautions that we take to keep people safe.
That's my next question is, you know, as you do go back, what kind of things are you thinking you'll do, or have you thought about that? Or,
well, yeah, I mean, we were already really emphasizing hand washing, you know, kind of like everybody did there in the beginning.
Right.
We put hand washing stations on everybody's truck 3 weeks ago. So I imagine that will remain part of the guidance when we get the yellow light we're referring to. So we'll continue with that. We'll see what's been said between now and then regarding other PPE, you know, masks, things of that nature. The few guys that we have working right now are already using masks. We're fortunate enough to get our hands on some. We're being very conservative with them. They're reusing them per the guidance that came with them from the manufacturer.
Right.
We're sensitive to healthcare workers needing them. In our case, especially the HVAC side, I felt a little heightened awareness of the situation because, you know, when we work on HVAC systems, the first thing you do a lot of the time is you go straight to the indoor unit, you pull the air filter.
Right.
Well, that's ground zero for anybody.
For everything, yeah.
If it's in the house at all, it's in that air filter, right? So
yeah.
I immediately thought of that, and we have basically, I guess I'll just say it, avoided that like the plague. There's a little irony in saying that, but we are not getting anybody's air handling system right now unless we absolutely, and we're talking, they don't have any heat, and they're elderly or something like that. We're just staying away from it because I'm not claiming to be a scientist, but I do know how that works. It's in the house, it's in that air filter. Or if it's not in the house and we have it and we put it in that air filter, it's in the house.
Yeah, now it's in the house. Yeah.
Yeah, so it goes both ways. So I expect we belong to a couple organizations that have been all over this, and I expect there to be some good detailed checklist type guidance when we come out of that, when we get the yellow light. There already is some, by the way, but I expect it to be even more formalized, if you will.
And hopefully maybe based on some of the new things that we don't yet know about this that we'll know by then, hopefully.
Yes, exactly. That's kind of what we're waiting on. I mean, is to feel better about being safe for everybody, community included, of course, you know. So as much as we've been asked to stay home, we're making the decision. We're just waiting to get some better guidance.
Yeah.
Like everybody is, you know.
Right.
So that's where we're at. I mean, I don't have a coronavirus yellow light safety plan in place at this point.
Right.
But I anticipate that we will.
Yeah, and I think that's all we can probably do is we know we will. We don't know what it's going to be, but we're going to have to.
My heart goes out to all the small business owners. And like I mentioned earlier, I liked your phrase of reserve and judgment. I only know how complicated and multifaceted my situation and a few others are, but I know that there's literally thousands, tens of thousands more that are every bit as complicated and multifaceted. So I would like to include that I hope everybody can find their way through this mess with, as far as businesses go, their businesses, you know, intact and able to rebound, because nobody knows what this is going to look like on the other side from so many different perspectives. I mean, the health perspective is, of course, the main one that we're all focused on right now, but there's just so much stuff that's going to change from, you know, minor changes to pretty drastic ones that who knows how long it'll take them to shake out, you know.
And I hope, too, that people can put more of a focus on local businesses after this that they may have missed during this whole process, or that they see struggling. And I just hope that it can maybe reset some folks to think more about locally owned and operated businesses than maybe they had in the past. A lot of people already consider that, but there are a lot of people that don't. And these types of things tend to have a much, you know, bigger and rougher impact on those small locally owned businesses than anybody else.
Yeah, you know, since we were talking about the PPP earlier, it did bring to mind, you know, what some people would consider political angle, but for me it's more economic and it's affected by politics. But, you know, we've seen in the course of the last 15 years multiple bailouts of large businesses, right? The airlines, the car manufacturers, the banks.
Yes.
When we look at how those actually played out in many circumstances, we now know, whether we did then or not, that gets more political than I'm kind of willing to do. But we now know that not only were those companies protected from, you know, an inability to cover payroll and basic expenses, they literally profited.
Right.
You know, the stock buyback is a prime example of that, right? So,
yeah.
There's no such thing as that for small businesses, even in this scenario where I'm very pleased that we do have some relief. Even so, there's nothing protecting my company's profits.
Right.
They're going away.
It's relief, basically. You know, I think that's the right word for it. It's relief that you're seeking. It's not, oh, well, I'm going to be able to angle this into making a windfall here during this crisis.
But it is interesting if you look at it from a political landscape perspective that I would, and I imagine so many others feel the same way, be so thankful for just relief.
Yeah.
When we know there are other scenarios by which large corporations actually profit from situations where they're supposed to be getting relief.
Yeah.
And that's it's worth pointing out from my perspective that there's no such thing for the small business.
Yeah. No, and I think that's exactly what the kind of thing that I'm hoping people continue to realize is that these small businesses aren't just important in the communities they're in, but they're just important in general.
No one's going to come to me or you, Corey, when this is all said and done and say, you know, we forgot to mention that for a 2-month period here or whatever it winds up being, you virtually had no opportunity to actually make money.
Right.
Here's that.
Yeah. And we appreciate you for doing that.
I think we all have to assume that check's not coming, right?
Right. Yes, that's right.
Whereas if we were a larger corporation that has received some of the more, let's call them, tailored bailouts.
Yeah, that are sometimes the writing of those bailouts is maybe helped along by some of those board members.
You reckon? Yeah. I mean, I guess I would say this way. I'm very thankful for the PPP. I think it's going to be extremely beneficial for our business. But if you let me write it, it probably would go further.
And that's
right. Give me a seat at the table. We'll talk about some other details.
Well, those large corporations have a seat at the table, right? Let's say it the way it is. If you ask me, they are the table.
Yeah. They've bought the table.
they bought the table. Right. So I'm hoping that this doesn't play out that way, but the realistic / cynical side of me envisions that it probably will.
I think that's another common thread for anybody that's listening to multiple episodes, that it seems like everybody we talk to that's a small business owner, always in the back of their mind, including me, is saying, you know, I don't really like to think about it because, you know, that doesn't really do me any good to focus on it. But I do feel like somehow they're going to get a win out of this if they're a big business. that's been everybody's sentiment.
I can't tell you how yet, but if you made me bet, I'd bet on them winning somehow, whereas the rest of us will. There's no way to slice this other than we're losing. Yeah. I'm not blaming it on anybody. I mean, I'll blame the virus.
Yeah.
But we don't come out of this whole.
No.
It's just not financially possible for us to come out of this hole, because we've already lost, in our case, our business, you know, going on 3 weeks of any chance at profit. I mean, we're obviously losing money. I feel like it's almost too obvious to state, but maybe it's worth stating, you know, we're losing money right now.
Yeah.
And I don't mean that, you know, normally we make money and now we're losing money, and
right.
we feel thankful for that opportunity. As a small business.
That's right.
So, you know, when I think about it from a larger standpoint, it stings to know that, you know, what exacerbates that sting is knowing that if you were grouping companies in to have the resources to handle this, you know, although painfully, and don't have the resources to handle this, it's the companies that probably do have the resources to handle it that don't have to.
Right. Yep. Yeah,
that's,
I agree.
That's the bitterness of it. That's the part where I get, you know, a little raw about it is, you know, these publicly traded large corporations in many cases have the reserve.
Right.
And, you know, everybody knows that a lot of individuals live paycheck to paycheck. Well, a lot of businesses live week to week.
Right.
And so you give them a week in some cases, but certainly 2, 3, 4 of not making the money they normally do, and they don't have a solution.
Yeah.
So it's not just covering their payroll. That's obviously a major benefit, but there's more to it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it can get real, real complicated real quick. And I think that's just another thing that is maybe uniquely entrepreneurial, is this idea that, you know, we all feel like we have to have contingency plans in place, or we have to have some reserves, or a lot of what if scenarios running through our mind. But I mean, I don't know how any of us could have thought, well, what if we were shut down for an extended period of time because of a virus?
Well, no, you know, if you're a good business manager, you always want to be in that situation. And that's part of your plan, is for even your own personal financial stability, is to be in that situation where you could handle a downturn.
Yeah.
But planning for one of this scope unexpectedly, I mean, it's not like we all had planned for retirement here. It's just not reasonable to expect that any significant percentage of small businesses would have that capability.
Well, and I think the reason I'm saying it is because I know that there are people that I've talked to about the podcast who are almost a little embarrassed to talk about their situation with their business on the podcast, because they feel that pressure or that embarrassment. And I mean, I hope that they don't, because we're all in this boat. Nobody planned for a pandemic in their business.
No, and you're right. I mean, when you manage a small business, you take a lot of pride in your ability to handle diversity, right? I mean, you know, we've done so well. For example, we're in HVAC and plumbing, and we're in a community that has a lot of retirees and vacation people. Construction happens more during the summer than other times of the year, so we already know that we're going to do more business between between April and September than we do between November and February.
Right.
I mean, on a per month basis. I don't know if I added those up correctly where it was an equal number of months, but you get my point. It's seasonal.
Right. Yeah.
So we use that in our annual planning. You know, we don't expect to do the same amount of business in February that we're going to do in July.
Right.
So that's a way of handling diversity. In this case, that diversity is seasonality. Right.
Right.
But nobody can plan for this.
No. I mean,
that's just like 2 months. In fact, it's pretty ironic. We got lucky. Not lucky. We did it on purpose, but we had a very good February compared to other Februarys.
Right.
That had put us specifically in a position where we weren't totally freaking out 2 days after this happened.
Right.
We had a little further. We had a little breathing room to consider our options.
Yeah.
But I know that's not the case for everybody else, and that's nothing for anybody to be embarrassed about. We just happened to do that, you know.
Right.
If this would have, and my partner and I have discussed this, if this would have happened last March, we would have been in a very different scenario.
Right.
We would have been against the wall pretty fast because it's just a lean. We'd just be coming off of the entirety of our slow season.
Right.
So,
yeah, and I think that makes a lot of sense, too, because different businesses have different slow seasons. So, you know, some you might have had a kind of a win in February. Somebody else had a loss.
For sure. I mean, I know.
Like, is their busy season? Or, you know, that's terrible.
That's nothing to be ashamed of. That's just literally timing. I mean,
yeah.
I didn't write the PPP, and I didn't make up the calendar.
Right.
Yeah, but I know what you're saying about people being embarrassed about it. I mean, that's what I was getting at. It's kind of a big part of our job is to be able to handle the diversity.
Yeah.
With this whole different degree and flavor.
Yeah, it's a whole new thing.
Who plans for that?
That's it for today, and we hope you enjoy your weekend. Please resist the urge to get together for Easter and stay home and keep social distancing. We'll be back next week with more episodes and some new guests and updates to programs available to entrepreneurs. We got really busy this week in our own businesses, but we'll be back very soon. You can find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you enjoyed it, please take the time to subscribe, rate, and review. That's really important. Read more about the people on each podcast at ea-podcast.com. You can listen to episodes on there, see photos and bios, and any supporting materials and links, and send us your questions or comments. And please don't forget to follow us on social media for info and videos.